It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Now, from the most powerful city in the world, a new generation of conservative talk. Fair, fresh, fun. It's the Guy Benson Show with Guy Benson.
It is Monday, March 20th, 2023. I'm Guy Benson. This is the Guy Benson Show, live from New York today and tomorrow. Thank you very much for tuning in every weekday between 3 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time, then around the clock for free on demand on our podcast. Our website here is GuyBensonShow.com. That's GuyBensonShow.com. You can also get the podcast at FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm the political editor at townhall.com. I'm a Fox News contributor, and I'm on Gutfeld tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern for the full hour. So looking forward to that, and also host of this fine program. And we have quite a lineup for you today as we kick off a new broadcast week. U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, is here in the building. She was just on with Martha. She'll be up here in studio momentarily. We'll chat with her later on this hour. Then, to start our next hour, this is fun. We have right here in studio both Brett Baier and Martha McCallum. How about that dynamic duo? Some Fox News heavy hitters here in studio. Looking forward to that. And then to begin our final hour, just after 5 p.m. Eastern time, we will have Andy McCarthy in the house, also in studio. So everyone's here in studio today. Andy is a longtime federal prosecutor, and so I am eager to get his analysis on the number one news story of the day, which is this possible Trump indictment that could be coming, I guess, maybe technically today or tomorrow, which was his prediction or his claim over the weekend, maybe Wednesday. We don't know. Maybe it doesn't happen at all. Maybe there's some sort of snag and a delay. It's been all rumors and all speculation up to this point. But the story really took off a few days ago over the weekend because President Trump put out on Truth Social that he was going to be arrested Tuesday, as in tomorrow. And he called several times on his supporters to protest. And I know some people were sort of scouring his post for the word peaceful, given previous calls for protest and what happened there. He left out that word, but then after he had posted at least his initial missive on Truth Social, one of his spokespeople came out and kind of walked it back, saying, we don't have any special information on the timing of this. This is based on some report that someone leaked to NBC. So we don't know. Right now, it's just a guessing game, but it's an informed guessing game because some of the prosecutors that I've spoken to, and we'll ask Andy about it later, they have been saying that based on the behavior of prosecutors going through a grand jury process in pursuit of an indictment and a prosecution, given what typically happens under those circumstances, everything leading up to this point is indeed pointing in that direction. Like all the things that they would be doing in sequence align with and comport with a scenario that would result in the dropping of an indictment on Trump at some point here. Now, that is not a fact yet. It's not necessarily an inevitability, but let's just call it an eventuality, a possibility, a strong possibility. It seems likely that it's coming. So over the weekend, as this was all breaking out and there was reaction pouring in, I was guest hosting and co-hosting the Big Sunday show and the Big Saturday show both days over the weekend. This is our lead story each day, and I put out a few of my thoughts on TV. I've written about it today at townhall.com. I sort of wanted to synthesize some of them here on the radio. It's the first time that I've had the opportunity to really flesh them out in this context with all of you. I would start with this. I read a Wall Street Journal editorial about this possibility about a week ago at this point. And it's important to note that if this indictment comes down, it's from Alvin Bragg, who's the left-wing Manhattan DA here in New York City. Right? He's a Democrat. He's extremely progressive. He's soft on crime. He's bankrolled by George Soros. He's one of those. He is looking at a fact pattern. He is looking at a potential crime here that the federal government looked at. The Department of Justice looked at this. These facts have been known for years. This is like the hush money, Stormy Daniels payment scandal around Trump. This is not new news. The feds took a look at this. The feds took a pass on this. They didn't believe that the facts that they had at their disposal were sufficient for an indictment, let alone a conviction. So they just said, no, we're not going down this route. But now Alvin Bragg apparently, reportedly, is poised to do exactly that. The Wall Street Journal editorializing and describing it this way, an elected Democratic prosecutor is going to try to indict a Republican former president and 2024 contender alleging a felony that could put him in prison. And it would boil down to a campaign finance violation, they ask. These are the editors of the Wall Street Journal, because they pointed out earlier in the piece that the underlying alleged crime here would be a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. In order to upgrade it to a felony, there would have to be a second corresponding crime where they would like combine together. And then if that level were met, if that threshold were met, that would be tantamount to a low-level felony. And that's a big if in all of this. And the Wall Street Journal editorial writers, they also quote the New York Times, which they don't often do at that particular editorial board when they're citing various sources. They quote the New York Times, the news pages of the New York Times, which reported this potential, still hypothetical scenario this way, quote, "The case against the former president hinges on an untested and therefore risky legal theory involving a complex interplay of laws, all amounting to a low-level felony." So this is like a novel attempted prosecution if they go down this route. Right? They call it untested and therefore risky. It's like you have to come up with a misdemeanor and then find this other potential misdemeanor and see if you can combine them to then bootstrap the thing into a low-level felony. And a lot of legal experts say this is a weak case. And by the way, that's not a shocking analysis from some of these experts, given the fact, as I've said already, the Department of Justice had all of this stuff in their crosshairs. And they looked at it and they said, we're not going there. It's not a strong case. It's not pursuable. But Alvin Bragg, elected Democrat, deep blue city prosecutor, he's decided, I want to get this guy in handcuffs or in a mugshot. And people have been promising to indict this man for years, and I'm going to be the one to do it. It is obviously political. Obviously political. Now, look, it is true that no one's above the law. It is also true that we don't know the extent of everything that Bragg has. Maybe there's something unexpected lurking out there. Again, we don't have all the facts. But based on everything that we do know, to me, this is disgraceful. We have never had a former president in the history of this country indicted or arrested or anything like that. And you're telling me the very first effort to do so is going to be on this sort of cockamamie, untried legal theory where they need to thread the needle different ways just to get to a low-level felony? That's how they're going to do this? I'm not saying that Trump or anyone else is above the law. If someone has committed a crime and it's open and shut, go for it. But if you're going to go down this path, given the profile of who Donald Trump is as a former president and as a current presidential candidate, it needs to be a big thing and it needs to be black and white. And in my mind, it is neither. And the fact that this guy, Bragg, might go down in history for having done this, which might be part of his thought process here, that is not a good thing for the country, in my view. And that is not, by the way, a defense on the merits of any of Trump's conduct. Right? You can point out, and I will right now, that Trump has denied that he even had this affair with Stormy Daniels. And of course, he calls her charmingly horse face. That's the way that he describes her, someone that pretty credibly he had sex with. He calls her horse face. Now he says that never happened. I mean, you can believe or not believe Donald Trump about whether he had an affair with this woman who is a porn star. But I'll put it this way. Do people, I won't even make this specifically about Trump, but you can also think about Trump specifically, someone who is known for not even paying bills that he owes, right? Stiffing contractors and that sort of thing. Someone who doesn't love writing checks to other people. And sometimes, you know, we'll force people into court over these types of disputes. Would someone be likely to funnel six figures of payments to a woman like Stormy Daniels and what her career path was and what she did for a living? Does it seem likely that someone would just do that and try to disguise those payments and have an NDA with someone like that just out of a voluntary bottom of his heart situation? Is that something that a prominent man you think would typically do, Donald Trump or otherwise? I don't. The idea that Donald Trump knew nothing about this woman and didn't know her at all and never had an affair with her, he just happened to pay her six figures for no apparent reason to not talk about something and then tried to disguise the way he was paying her. I mean, that seems like it kind of speaks for itself. And am I open to the possibility that listing this in a way on the, you know, financial documents of the Trump Organization might have been some misdemeanor or something? I have no idea if Trump had any personal knowledge of that. That's another thing they'd have to prove here. Again, there's no I'm not defending Trump. The Stormy Daniels blizzard and all the problem that he's got with her and then Michael Cohen, these are people that he brought into his life, into his orbit in different ways. He has sort of manifested this drama and these problems for himself. And I personally don't believe him about his interactions with Ms. Daniels. I don't. Those are separate questions from, is this something, what, 6 or 7 years old at this point, that is worthy of this type of prosecution and for the first time ever to indict someone, a former president of the United States? To me, it's not even a close call. And obviously the prosecutors at the DOJ here in New York agree with me. So I think that is an extremely, extremely bad look, especially from a guy like Alvin Bragg. Because what is this guy most famous for, arguably? Alvin Bragg is the guy who downgrades criminal charges, right? Mr. Progressive, right? Mr. Equity and Social Justice. The UK Daily Mail had a story late last year at the end of 2022 where they had looked at Bragg's time in office as the Manhattan DA. He had downgraded a majority of felony charges to misdemeanors over the course of his time as the DA in Manhattan. 52% of felonies he downgraded to misdemeanors, including some really disgusting violent stuff, like armed robbery, an anti-Semitic assault. I mean, grand larceny with another assault. I mean, there are examples littering his history. He is someone who really doesn't like charging people heavily and putting them behind bars for a long period of time. It doesn't align with his ideology. So he goes out of his way, Alvin Bragg, to let criminals maybe not get away with it, although in some cases you could make that case, but at least to have lesser consequences for their actions. That's his MO. That's his worldview. And yet, weirdly, in this one case, He's trying to invent some heretofore unseen legal path to upgrade a misdemeanor to a felony because the alleged would-be felon happens to be named Donald Trump and all the politics caught up in all of that. All right, that stinks to me. That is clearly politics. And you don't have to be a red baseball cap wearing Trump person to see that for what it is. So I guess we'll find out what happens. If anything happens, maybe in the next couple of days, we'll see. But that's my view on it. Now, what are the politics of this? I'll get into some of that as soon as we come back. Just getting started on this Monday from New York. It's the Guy Benson Show.
The Guy Benson Show. More next. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
I'm Guy Benson. We're back. And we're talking about this potential Trump indictment, which, for the reasons that I laid out in the last segment, strike me as a would-be abuse of office by Alvin Bragg. Unfortunately, based on a lot of the incentives at play, I think in some ways it's a win-win for Democrats if he goes through with this. Even if the case doesn't stick, even if the case fails, here's why. Number one, you've had people desperate for Trump to be indicted, incarcerated, under prosecution, really since he won the presidency, if not before. There has been an itch that the Democratic base, the resistance people, have been so eager to scratch. This would give them something, right? Of all the walls are closing in, all of that. Like, finally, they're like, aha, we've got our thing. So Bragg would thrill that element of his base, and thrilling the base is a big part of politics these days. So they'd be all fired up. And then also, I think, if this happens, I suspect, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that there would be something of a rally around the flag effect for Trump on the Republican side of the base, where people would say, this is ridiculous. Here's another witch hunt. This is worse than ever. They've indicted this guy. It's this unprecedented thing. What an abuse. We've got to rally to Trump because it's so unfair. And the more Republicans rally to Trump, I think a lot of national Democrats would say, sounds good to us, because they've been clearly telegraphing they want to run against Trump again in 2024. So you can cleave him further to his base while thrilling your own base and maybe getting the guy that you want to run against anyway, have a better chance of winning the primary and going on to a general election. The incentives are lined up for this to be a win-win for them. Now, other GOP voters might have other thoughts. We'll get into that later on the Guy Benson Show.
Talking about the issues you care about, Guy Benson.
We're back. We're in New York. It's the Guy Benson Show. Thanks for listening. GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast free every day. It's time for our first guest. She's here in studio with us. It's U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, a regular here on the show, typically not here. So it's exciting to see you.
Yes, it is so good to be in studio with you.
And absolutely.
Yes. What a busy day.
It is so busy. I was like, where do I start with the senator? And I figured let's start here. You've got two of America's top adversaries meeting today, Putin and Xi, Russia and China, respectively. What do you make of this meeting? They're trying to make it seem like, oh, you know, Chairman Xi's going to come in to make a peace deal. There's that aspect to it. There's the White House response to all of this. Just give us some of your thoughts.
Yes. And what I think we have to realize is that China is the dominator in what I call the new axis of evil, Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. And China is trying to cozy up to Putin. Putin can't fight this war without them. He's got to have somebody to buy his oil and gas. And so his big market right now is China. China is also front-loading some money and support to Russia so that Iran can manufacture drones in Russia. They're encouraging North Korea to send rockets to Russia.
And the Iranians are helping with the drones. I mean,
That's right.
Really is an access.
Yes, it is an access. Now, for Xi, what he is trying to do is push himself forward as the great peacemaker and as someone who is the superpower. And if he can go in there and meet with Putin and then go over and see Zelensky, and Zelensky takes that meeting, and then Zelensky and Xi talk about what could be a path forward to ending this, then Xi feels like it elevates him on the global stage. Now, the sad thing about this is you've got John Kirby out there acting like, well, you know, we wish them luck and, you know, we shouldn't worry about this. And Antony Blinken is trying to get over to China. And you've got Yellen and Raimondo, and they're trying to go. And that's the worst thing to do. It should be Joe Biden as president of the United States that is taking Xi Jinping to task over COVID, over fentanyl, over trade. Yes. Over great power competition, over the Belt and Road Initiative. He should be the one saying, look, we're going to sanction you unless you cut out this fentanyl, unless you come clean on COVID, unless you take down TikTok. And, of course, Joe Biden is so weak that he's not doing that. And the Chinese and the Russians, everybody perceived Joe Biden as being weak. And there you have it. You see a president who can't seem to get off of square one when it comes to dealing with foreign powers.
Well, and also the idea, with all due respect, that the leader of China, really the dictator of China, is going to come in and make peace in a war that his government is funding, right? They're helping the Russians.
Right.
And there's mounting evidence that they're being more and more direct in their assistance to the Russians, which is the aggressive invading force in the war. The idea that he's going to come in and be Mr. Peace, I think, is in its own right laughable.
It is laughable, and it is one of the reasons that we should be very forthright in saying, oh, no, you don't, and showing some strength and saying, China, we're not sending anybody to meet with you. If you want to meet, you need to come here and you need to come with answers and you need to come stopping this dealing with the cartels. You've got 100,000 Americans that lost their lives, fentanyl being the primary cause of these deaths, with that fentanyl being manufactured by Chinese scientists, then being trucked into the U.S. by the pounds, not the grams, but pounds, and
from Mexico.
From Mexico. The cartels being active here. You've got the Chinese nationals appearing at the southern border, a 700% increase. Mm-hmm. You've got the cartels bringing terrorists to our border. And Guy, as you know, nobody comes to that border unless they're going through the cartels. And to allow this to continue is just absolutely mind-boggling,
well,
and it's so frightening.
Think about that. On the other side of our border, on the other side of America's southern border, there is, in effect, a sovereign, stateless country that is run by the drug cartel terrorist crime syndicate. That is kind of the reality of it. It's not really fully Mexican-controlled territory. It's controlled by the cartels. And
yes,
since we brought this up, I would love to get your reaction to what the president of Mexico has been saying. He's been spouting off this guy for the last week and a half, saying increasingly outrageous things. I saw the latest quote was he was blaming the fentanyl crisis in America on American families not loving each other or hugging each other enough. That was something that he said. Previously, he said, Republicans, frankly, like you, need to shut up and stop talking about this problem, or else he's going to do a big propaganda campaign in the U.S. to tell Hispanic voters to never vote for Republicans because you're like offending him and the cartels, apparently. When you hear a foreign leader promise to meddle in our elections, interfere in our elections against your party unless you stop talking about a real issue, what's your reaction to that?
They are doing this because they know Joe Biden's not going to do anything to them. and he is not challenging any of these foreign leaders. And I think they kind of hold hands over at the State Department and sing Kumbaya and think that everybody is going to love them if they try to appease them. And to say, you know, the fentanyl crisis is caused because we're not hugging our children enough, when he knows that they are not distributing fentanyl in Mexico. They're not distributing it in Canada. They don't are distributed in China. It is here in the United States. They are targeting us with this. And so he knows that, and he thinks he can get by with it because he doesn't think Joe Biden's going to do anything to him.
And he thinks he can tell you and some of your Republican colleagues not to even talk about it, or else he's going to come in here and...
Because he's beholden to the cartels. And you've got the cartels, as you said, that are in charge of that area south of the border. They have set up labs in Mexico to make the fentanyl, the Chinese chemist there. And then they're bringing it across this border. The cartels are getting rich. You know, they've turned human trafficking into a $13 billion a year business. In 2018, it was a $500 million a year business. So
business is booming.
Yes, it is booming for them. They are making hundreds of millions of dollars every single week. And our nation is suffering because of this.
And yet there's a total, I think, lack of seriousness of purpose is politely putting it when it comes to the border issue.
Yeah.
I mean, they try to make it seem like it's all about just, you know, innocent people who want to claim asylum in the United States. And that is true of a fraction of what's coming across the border. It's still not an excuse to just allow this to go with impunity, because there's so much chaos down there that in the chaos you have dangerous people, dangerous drugs, victims of sexual trafficking and that sort of thing coming through. And it's just so frustrating to me, Senator, that people like us, frankly, who care about this and are upset by this, were like being insulted by the supposed leader of the country to our south, and then told by a lot of people in this country that we're sort of like these evil xenophobic people because we're telling scary stories. Well, 70,000 dead is a pretty scary story.
That is a scary, that's a frightening stat. And then you look at what TikTok is doing to kids. And you look at how, going back to the border issue, what is happening to cities and communities all across the country when those that have illegally entered the country are coming into the communities and they need a lot of health care. They need a lot of social services. They need extra attention in schools, and trying to meet those needs. And see, that burden is transferred onto those communities and cities. And you will hear communities, whether they're South Texas communities or whether it is here in New York City, people talking about what is going on in the hospitals.
Yep, and having overwhelmed hospitals. We read a story about that recently. There was one, I think, here in the city, and then there was one in Arizona where there weren't enough beds for women in that community who needed to give birth. So they were driving hours away so they can give birth in a hospital, because you have a hospital completely overrun by illegal immigrants. And it's like, you can feel compassion for those human beings and also say, this is not sustainable or acceptable in a sovereign country. This is not how this should work.
That's right. And to think that there is anything compassionate about what the cartels is doing is ludicrous.
Right.
Because the individuals that are coming need so many services because they have been physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, and drug abused making that journey. And so they come needing so much help. So I look at what is happening out here, and you look at what is happening at our border, people from 176 different countries coming in. You look at the cartels and how they have turned into global organizations. You have to say, how is it that so many terrorists, 69 already this year,
yeah, and counting,
that have come, that have been apprehended
that have
to
been caught.
Our border? Right. They're the ones that are caught. There are others that are the gotaways.
We're close to 1.5 million gotaways under Biden.
That's right. And what? Where are these people, and what are they going to do to us? That needs to be the question that everybody is asking. And people need to say, this is not right. We cannot sustain this.
Since you mentioned it a moment ago, I do want to close by asking you about TikTok, because it seems like there's maybe some momentum growing on a bipartisan basis. When it comes to TikTok, we've already seen a lot of governmental entities say, okay, none of our devices can have TikTok on them.
Right.
So that's one step. There are discussions about, okay, can TikTok perhaps be completely severed from its CCP connections to continue operating in the United States? Is that possible? I know there's a hearing later this week with the CEO of TikTok. We'll have to answer some of these, I think, tough questions about the CCP. Then there's discussion about maybe just a ban. Should TikTok be banned inside the United States? I know a lot of young people aren't thrilled about that because they enjoy TikTok and they like it. But there's a national security component there as well, and then sometimes adults in the room have to decide things. What do you make of that? What are some of the options here?
Here is what we need to realize about TikTok is that ByteDance owns them and a couple of other apps. As long as ByteDance is involved, the corporate governance there allows members of the board, and the CCP has a board seat on that. They have access to that data. It doesn't matter if it is stored in your basement or somewhere in D.C. or somewhere in Colorado or wherever on U.S. soil. What it does is give them access to that data. And the way that algorithm works on TikTok here in the U.S. is that it basically surveils you, keystrokes, your patterns, your search. The FBI came out and confirmed that a few weeks ago. And because of that, you cannot put the protocols in place that would secure that regardless of where they say they're going to store the data.
And the thing is, so it has to be a totally clean break or a ban if you're going to deal with this, because you've got the data storage issue. You've got the propaganda capacity in a very serious way. And my understanding is the version of TikTok that's available to kids in China is quite different.
It's an educational app in China. And you see that some of our friends in the EU have abandoned TikTok. They've also let go of Hikvision, which is a base, an app that is used with security cameras. They've had problems with that. And they have figured out that that is being used as a surveillance mechanism also. So clean breaks are going to be better on that. It is going to go a long way in protecting our children. The Chinese Communist Party is poisoning our people with fentanyl. They're poisoning the minds of our children with TikTok. We have over a million Americans that lost their lives and many more who have endured loss of livelihood, kids that have myocarditis, and all because of COVID. So they
which originated there, and they've been lying and covering up.
That's right.
And how and why that happened.
Then
you've got the genocide against the Uyghurs and crushing democracy in Hong Kong. This is the list. Tibet. There's a news story out of Tibet today. Like, the list goes on and on.
It does.
And we can either take this seriously or not. And I'm hoping that maybe there's some bipartisan momentum toward taking it more seriously. I know it's something that you watch very closely. U.S. Senator Marshall Blackburn of Tennessee, a Republican here in studio with us in New York. It is good to see you.
Good to see you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's The Guy Benson Show.
The Guy Benson Show. More next.
We're back. It's the Guy Benson Show. So CNN had a crew in San Francisco, and they were going to be covering, actually, the crime problem in San Francisco. And so they're there. They're getting ready. They've got interviews set up to cover street crime in the city of San Francisco. And the CNN crew got robbed in the process of reporting on crime in the city. So their reporter, Kyung La, tweeted this, got robbed again. So I guess this has happened more than once. Jason K, CNN, and I were at City Hall in San Francisco to do an interview for CNN. We had security watch our rental car and crew car. Thieves did this in under 4 seconds, and there's a photo. Security stopped the jerks from stealing other bags, but seriously, this is ridiculous. So they had cars with security as a news crew at City Hall for the purpose of reporting on this problem, and thieves struck in a matter of seconds. I will remind you that during the pandemic, San Francisco schools were closed as long, if not longer, than almost anywhere else in the country, with like Los Angeles right there as well, a few others, Chicago. And what was the city council up to during that period of time in San Francisco? They were busy debating the renaming of those schools because there were offensive words and names like Lincoln. Even Dianne Feinstein was deemed to be too offensive to have a school named after her. That was their priority. Renaming schools while they were closed, where kids couldn't learn. So you've got this giant problem on crime in the streets of the city of San Francisco. And what is the Board of Supervisors up to these days? They have just endorsed a reparations plan that we told you about last week, where eligible black residents will get like a $5 million payment per person and lifetime salary for like 250 years. They could buy a house for $1. All of their taxes are gone. All of their debts disappear. Reparations paid for by tax dollars. That's what the Board of Supervisors is doing in San Francisco. Meanwhile, this is what's happening in their city, on the streets, right outside City Hall, every single day. What priorities from these people? Another hour coming up.
Live from the most powerful city in the world, unconventional talk from a fresh, unconventional conservative, Guy Benson Show.
A brand new hour underway from New York City. It's the Guy Benson Show. Thanks for being here on this Monday. GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast free every day on demand when the show is over. Catch me tonight on Gutfeld, 11 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. Fox News alert as we get rolling here in our middle of 3 hours. The Dow closes up big, 382 points, finishing the day at 32,244. And here in studio, I am thrilled to introduce two guests, the A-team politically here at Fox News, Brett Baer and Martha McCallum together. Thanks for doing this. This is like a booking coup.
Well, we've got Brett in New York today, which is always a treat.
Yeah, it's fun.
Good to have you here.
And
yeah,
you were on Martha's show, and Martha's going to be on the panel on Special Report.
So a lot of synergy here.
So much synergy. It's very exciting. And, of course, the number one story that broke over the weekend is this potential looming Trump indictment, which he had telegraphed was coming tomorrow. There's some indication it could come as soon as today. I guess they're putting up barricades downtown just in case it comes down. Does that make sense to you, this would happen today, Brett?
It doesn't make sense to me at all. Like
the whole thing.
The whole thing doesn't make sense to me. The fact that you know, you have this Manhattan DA going down this road on something that the previous DA decided he was not going to do. And the actual charge is a federal charge dealing with the election and affecting the election. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can fit under that bucket. And I just think it's fascinating that this is the thing that is going to tip the balance. I mean, there's a lot of other things out there that potentially Trump faces, but this one is probably one he could swing for the fences on.
Yeah, and why not? And the thing is, you guys both know, I've been on your shows enough, I'm not a huge Trump guy, never have been, but you look at the facts of this case, including how old it is and the fact that the feds passed on it and all this, it's hard to look at this as anything other than not just political, but really an abuse of office, because Alvin Bragg goes out of his way not to charge people with felonies as often as possible, but he's going to conjure out of thin air some brand new legal theory to turn this into a felony because it's Donald Trump. to me, there are some Banana Republic vibes there, Martha, that I think would disturb people beyond just like the hardcore Trump supporters.
Yeah. You know, I mean, his history in this town is complicated, right? You've got a lot of people who look at what's going on with crime here and, you know, police officers who pull people off the street only to find out that they're back on the street the next day. So he has a criminal justice reform mindset when it comes to, I think, the things that sort of are closest to people's lives living and working in New York City. And yet he's going way out on a limb on this after, remember, they did not pursue the financial case against President Trump. That one kind of fell apart. He decided not to prosecute that. He had a couple of lawyers who were really angry that he didn't prosecute that case. And it was about how you mark your real estate investments for tax purposes and also for asset purposes. So he got a lot of heat for that. So you have to wonder what's going on in the mind of Alvin Bragg right now that he decides this is the one that he wants to hang his hat on. And I think for the former president, he's probably so thrilled that this is where he wants to go with this. This is Stormy Daniels. It's a salacious kind of story. The president, like John Edwards, certainly has the argument, like, I was trying to protect my family. You know, I was embarrassed by this situation. I needed it to go away. Then they're trying to take what's a misdemeanor and turn it into a national, a federal election violation. It's a very, very tricky, very heavy lift that, as Brett pointed out, Cyrus Vance didn't want to touch. The feds didn't want to touch it. So I think that probably the former president. That's probably why he was so enthusiastic about saying, you know, they're going to arrest me on Tuesday, because I think he sees this as a rallying cry for people, because it's very, in many ways, it's simple to understand. It's like, what? You know, they want to get him on that. And he's still got January 6th. He's still got the classified document situation. He's still got the Georgia election. All of these sort of more substantive things hanging out there that are, you know, the evidence is sort of building towards.
And if this one goes first.
This one is first.
Yeah. You mean if it paints a picture, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, it does.
And it's
I will say that he's not conceding anything. That, you know, it's in Trump's MO. He was not protecting the family, he says.
Never happened.
Totally false.
Right. As I said in the open, Brett, do you think Donald Trump would be eager to pay anyone six figures just for funsies? Right.
No.
To not to not talk about something that definitely wasn't an affair.
I think it's interesting. I just wanted to that he says, I didn't have an affair. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's your definition of an affair?
Yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean that.
Exactly.
But regardless, though, because I've had people yelling at me on social media saying, you know, how can you defend Trump for the porn star and the hush money? I'm like, I'm not doing any of that. I'm saying, is this the way that you'd have the first ever indictment of a former president in this country under these circumstances and this convoluted bank shot of a possible prosecution? It just seems totally crazy and wrong to me.
Yeah.
But there's the political implications here where a lot of folks are saying, I think plausibly, that this could help Trump, at least in the short term, with the Republican electorate.
I think it'll help with a sector of the Republican electorate. I'm not sure it helps with independents and suburban women. It's not really in their sweet spot.
In a general, sure.
Yeah. No, but I mean, even in a primary, I don't know. It'll fire up the base 100%. But you saw Governor DeSantis kind of tiptoe through the tulips here, and I'm sure
can
you have
play
the
that?
Soundbite.
It's a little over a minute, but I think it's worth really listening to, because all weekend long, the Trump people were like, where's DeSantis? Why? Like, they turned this into a Ron DeSantis scandal. Because he hasn't responded forcefully enough. Well, he was asked about it today, this morning in Florida. Cut 24. Here's the response.
So I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is that if you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago, to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong.
All right, Brett, that's some pretty skillful tulip tiptoeing, as you put it right there. He started and closed with Alvin Bragg, then a little comment in there about how he couldn't possibly speak to the hush money to porn star component of this, which was a bit of a dig, obviously.
Yeah, he got it in twice.
Yeah.
And now the DeSantis political arm flagging this portion of his remarks in the aftermath of the former president's comments, because the former president went to Truth Social, and they're now pointing to the portion where he focuses on Alvin Bragg and Soros-funded prosecutors, and the real victims are New Yorkers and ordinary Americans, blah, 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 blah. It's the end of his statement, and he's the only one who managed to get a Soros DA out of office in Florida. So they sense that Trump world is – there is a break in the force in Trump world about Ron DeSantis. And you saw Steve Bannon going to the airwaves, lambasting DeSantis's comments and the former president really going after him. So we're in a surreal place currently. This is a surreal moment.
Yep. We've had a lot of them.
I think we'll have
more.
We've
had a lot of them.
Yeah. And the thing is, Martha – and I saw Trump, I guess, fired back on Truth Social saying, oh, yeah, well – you know, Tiny D over there down in Florida, someone's going to accuse him one day of something. A woman or even a man might accuse him of something. So, like, threw that in there for good measure. Here's the thing. What DeSantis said, at least in my mind, is absolutely true about Alvin Bragg, talking about the weaponization, all of that. Also, we are dealing with a situation where pretty obviously Donald Trump was covering up something to do with this porn star woman. And DeSantis is just saying, like, I have no experience in that category. I mean, it's perfectly fair game to say that.
It's perfectly fair game, and it's skillful on his part. And what we're looking at right now is a GOP nomination process where the former president is in first place in most of the polling that we're seeing. And DeSantis at this moment, this could obviously change, and we know from history it likely will, is the most likely person to give him a run for his money. And so he is positioned as an alternative to chaos, right? And he's sort of highlighting, well, let's all remember, you know, some of the things about what it was like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has to constantly position himself as the other choice in all of this.
And a little bit later in that statement, because he gave a long answer to the question, and he said, look, we're just busy here in Florida. We're not going to get involved. I've got governing to do. And he might as well have just said, look, I've got a day job. We're doing some governing down here. Also, have I mentioned my beautiful wife and my young family? No porn stars in sight. Like, not exactly subtle. And the Trump people are mad, but they're going to always be mad. They're mad unless Ron DeSantis won't run for president and endorses Donald Trump. So, I mean, we're seeing that. In the meantime, we did see, Brett, this call for protests from the former president if he gets indicted. A couple times. Obviously, that raised some eyebrows as well. I guess they're preparing for that here in New York in case this comes down. It just seems like it might be, even if the indictment does happen, anticlimactic in the sense that a trial date would be way out in the future. It's not like this is not – he's not going to be sitting in a jail cell anytime soon or probably ever.
Yeah, and even – if an indictment came, he's not going to be frog marched down in handcuffs in orange jumpsuit. It's not going to be like that.
That's like fan fiction on the resistance left.
Yeah, it's going to be behind the scenes. There may be a picture. It may be a fingerprinting. But it's not going to be what everybody thinks it's going to be, I think. Now, I'm of the mindset that I don't think any of this is going down because there will be reality that sets in. Like, holy cow, you go down this road and you charge a former president and you don't have the goods, you are making him a martyr in every way, shape, and form. Now, there's all kinds of people out there saying maybe this is the bank shot. This is Democrats who want the thing to fire up the Trump base so that he becomes the GOP nominee and then he runs against Biden and Biden wins again.
Plausible as well. I mean, they've been telegraphing they would love to run against him again. I made this point earlier in the show. This would further ingratiate him to the base. even non-Trump people saying this is so wrong. This is not just. This is something else, and it's not okay. Also, we have so many news cycles between now and Iowa that I think sometimes we look directly in front of us and we forget that we have short memories, and that even by the time August rolls around and you guys are doing the first debate, and I think there'll be candidate forums. Is that right? Before then, potentially, Martha?
Potentially, yep.
All right. We're not going to make any news there, I guess.
But well, we're still trying.
We're working on it.
I mean,
gotcha.
it's tricky.
It's a process, yeah.
It's tricky. And, of course, more than half the people rumored to run aren't in the race yet, so there's that as well. Before I let you guys go, 20 years ago was the start of the Iraq War. Brett, you were Pentagon correspondent here at Fox. Just some of your reflections 2 decades on in this huge, huge event in all of our political lifetimes, where the politics certainly of it have totally, totally shifted from 9/11 to now.
Yeah, there was a sense, and you know, there was a lot of coverage about weapons of mass destruction and whether they were there or not. And looking back at it now, it's like they weren't there and what a screw up. At the time, 17 world intelligence agencies were saying it's 100%, it's a lock. You had Democrats on the Senate floor saying this has to be dealt with because they were looking through the prism of 9/11 and saying if Saddam Hussein has this stuff, we've got to deal with it now. He'd already shot at U.S. planes in the no-fly zone. So the case was being made. And all I remember is covering it in the Pentagon and then going overseas and doing nonstop coverage of the rolling in from Kuwait of U.S. troops. And
shock and awe.
We had amazing people on the ground for us. Rick Leventhal at the time and Greg Kelly was in there. I was at the Pentagon doing live coverage with Shepard Smith anchoring. And I'm talking live for hours on end, just bouncing from live pictures around the world. It was quite something.
20 years ago. Brett Baier, Martha McCallum, both in studio in New York. I don't know what I did to deserve this, but it's very exciting. And I know that Martha will be on Special Report tonight in the 6 p.m. hour with Brett on Fox News Channel. We'll be watching. Thanks, you guys.
You bet.
Thank you, Guy. Great to see you.
Quick break on The Guy Benson Show. We'll be right back.
Fresh conservative talk. Guy Benson Show.
I'm Guy Benson. We're back. So here's another story from over the weekend. House Republicans have revealed in new court documents that they've ascertained that it looks like 3 or maybe even 4 members of the Biden family have now received some amount of money from Chinese sources. And so the list keeps growing. And of course, Hunter's involved in this as well. And so Joe Biden, the president, was asked about this outside the White House. It's loud. It's hard to hear because you can hear the helicopter in the background. But someone did ask him. He gave a short answer. Here's the exchange in cut 27.
Any reference to House GOP new memo about your family dealings, sir?
Family dealings.
Yes, you're revealing that Hunter Biden's business associate sent over $1 million to 3 of your family members. Any reaction to that report?
Not true.
It's not true, he says. So he was confused, and then she clarified, and then he had this quick little smile. It's not true. Now, I don't believe him. If it's look, is it possible that this is untrue and the documents are made up or this never happened? I guess it's possible, although the defense from Hunter world, I believe, has been, well, he was a private citizen, engaged in business. There's nothing wrong with it. Biden saying it didn't happen. Those are not compatible. Like, you got to pick one here. Either the money didn't go to these members of the Biden family from China, or it did, but it's fine. But so far, we've gotten a little bit of each, which is not a coherent response, number one. Number two, Joe Biden, when it comes to his family business dealings, has lied already on multiple occasions. Right? He was asked by Peter Doocy. I mentioned this on TV yesterday. Peter Doocy asked him if he had any knowledge of any of Hunter's foreign business entanglements, and we got a categorical blanket denial from Joe Biden, candidate at the time. He knew nothing about any of it. And a lot of evidence shows us that that's not true. Not just the testimony of Tony Bobulinski, but other stuff as well. And no one's ever disproven anything Bobulinski's claimed, by the way. He's out there testifying, giving interviews. There's been no evidence countering that guy on anything. So that was absolutely not true. Lots of evidence that was not true. And then there was the other side, which was the Hunter Biden laptop, which Joe and his campaign told everyone who would listen was Russian disinformation, which was a lie. The fact that they laundered it through a bunch of ex-Intel people makes it worse. And a bunch of the media and social media companies colluded and got involved in that. But it was a lie to try to disqualify the issue by calling it Russian disinformation, which it was not. I remember one like CBS reporter asked Biden about it. He got really angry at that guy. Like, how dare you ask me? This is Russian disinformation. That wasn't true. So forgive me. When Joe Biden is asked about new evidence along these lines on this front, and he says it's not true, my immediate inclination is to not believe him based on his own track record on this stuff. The Guy Benson Show is back after this.
You're listening to a new generation of talk, Guy Benson.
We are just past the halfway point on this Monday edition of The Guy Benson Show. GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast always free. Want to talk about COVID here for a few minutes. First of all, by the way, I saw this. Apparently, the CDC put out their biweekly update newsletter a few days ago, and they are still really actively agitating for kids to get boosted and to wear masks. That's just crazy. We've had doctors on this show talking about how it is a bad idea to do either of those things. But it is still CDC guidance officially to do both of those things. And by the way, the vast, 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 vast majority of parents of kids that age in this country have rejected the official CDC guidance, which says a lot about the credibility of the CDC and the health bureaucracy in this country. Where parents, I mean, of all political stripes at this point, are looking at the, not necessarily directives, but the recommendations of the CDC about supposedly how to keep their kids safe from COVID. And the vast majority of these parents are saying no and no. How about that? So just bang up job by Rochelle Walensky and Anthony Fauci and that whole crew. You've done this to yourselves. And you continue to double and triple down on this stuff. It's just amazing. Now, the other thing that I wanted to raise and the main focus here of the segment is something that I wrote about earlier today at townhall.com. So a few days ago, the New York Times published a story that at least suggested or offered some new alleged evidence that could bolster the natural origin theory of COVID. Meaning this idea that COVID somehow arose from nature and did not leak from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. We have concluded, based on a lot of circumstantial evidence, that the lab leak theory is the most likely theory. There are numerous experts who agree with us. The Biden Energy Department, as we mentioned here, just came to that same conclusion and announced that recently, aligning themselves with the FBI, the former CDC director, and others. And just common sense, based on the fact that this thing started in the city where that institute is located, and that institute does research on exactly these kinds of coronaviruses and has had security incidents in the past, right? That seems like a combination of factors that isn't just a weird coincidence. And as I've mentioned ad nauseum, the Chinese government went out of their way, just bending over backwards to obstruct a true, independent, thorough investigation into what happened, which they would be incentivized to do if this had escaped from their lab, which would be a very bad look for them. And they would be much more open, I would guess, to a true investigation and transparency if they were confident this wasn't something that would look bad for them. But the New York Times has this story, and I saw it. I remember thinking, okay, well, I do want to address this on the air. There's an update to it that's even more important. All right, so here is just a quote from the Times piece. An international team of virus experts said on Thursday that they had found genetic data from a market in Wuhan, China, linking the coronavirus with raccoon dogs for sale there, adding evidence to the case that the worst pandemic in a century could have been ignited by an infected animal that was being dealt through the illegal wildlife trade. The genetic data was drawn from swabs taken from and in and around the Huanan seafood wholesale market starting in January 2020, shortly after the Chinese authorities had shut down the market because of suspicions that it was linked to the outbreak of a new virus. By then, the animals had been cleared out, but researchers swabbed walls, floors, metal cages, and carts often used for transporting animal cages. In samples that came back positive for coronavirus, the international research team found genetic material belonging to animals, including large amounts that were a match for the raccoon dog, three scientists involved in the analysis said. The jumbling together of genetic material from the virus and the animal does not prove that a raccoon dog itself was infected, and even if a raccoon dog had been infected, it would not be clear that the animal had spread the virus to people. Another animal could have passed the virus to people, or someone infected with the virus could have spread the virus to a raccoon dog. Okay. So the bats are out. The raccoon dogs are in, apparently. I did not have raccoon dogs on the COVID bingo card for the month, but here we have it. And that last sentence is most important. Because they're just swabbing floors and cages, they have no idea what the actual origin here is. Just that some raccoon dogs had COVID. That's it. Could have gotten it from themselves. It could have started with the raccoon dogs. Could have gotten it from another animal. TBD, TBA, don't know where those animals are. Or they could have gotten it from a human at some point. They don't know. So the headline that there's new evidence in support of the natural origin theory, or at least that takeaway that they're hoping people will internalize, actually has no basis in what these experts actually found. But I guess these folks are among the crowd that's heavily invested and wedded to the natural origin theory, or really fighting the lab leak theory for some reason. So they put this out there, like this weird raccoon dog red herring that doesn't prove anything at all, as the New York Times piece even admits. Well, Jerry Dunleavy over at the Washington Examiner looked even further into these claims. And boy, just listen, I'm going to read from his story. A group of scientists who have long pushed the theory that COVID-19 may have emerged from a Wuhan wet market has now pushed fresh claims involving raccoon dogs that have not been peer-reviewed after the Wuhan lab leak possibility gained credence in recent weeks. On Thursday, both The Atlantic and The New York Times published stories contending that raccoon dogs sold at the Huanan seafood wholesale market in Wuhan may have been an intermediary host for COVID-19, and that the fox-like mammals may have helped start the pandemic at the Chinese wet market. The scientists did not publish their findings or have them peer-reviewed, but rather described them to the media outlets. But the raccoon dog theory has only emerged following increasingly firmer intelligence assessments in recent weeks pointing to the Wuhan lab as the source of the outbreak that resulted in the pandemic. So a couple interesting things here. This group of scientists, we'll learn more about them in a second. These are the experts saying, oh gosh, now you have more people jumping on the bandwagon that this thing came from the lab. We don't like this. We've been pushing the other theory now for years. So let's throw this new information out there. We're not going to show our work. We're not going to show our data. We're not going to have the data and our conclusions or our theories peer-reviewed by other scientists who can actually look under the hood. We're just going to call up the New York Times and the Atlantic and tell them what we've found. And hopefully they'll just publish it, which is what they did. Now, who are these people? And what's the context to all of this? The Washington Examiner story goes on, and this is a lengthy passage, but it's worth listening to. Chinese government scientists had previously published their own study related to this alleged data in February 2022, so more than a year ago. And the New York Times reported Thursday that one of these experts that are now being quoted had discovered the new data had been hosted by the Chinese Center for Disease Control on a genetics website last week, but the data were allegedly removed after international scientists began asking questions about it. So I guess some data showed up on some website based in China. Some scientists were like, hey, what's this about? And then the data disappeared. Richard Ebright, the lab director for the Waxman Institute of Microbiology at Rutgers University, told the Washington Examiner on Friday that raccoon dog claims, quote, add little to the discussion because, quote, the data do not indicate that a raccoon dog was infected with SARS-CoV-2, much less that a raccoon dog was infected with SARS-CoV-2 and then transmitted SARS-CoV-2 to a human. So it's not even confirmed that the raccoon dogs had COVID, let alone that they had it and then they were responsible for passing it to people. That's not what the data shows. Dr. Ebright added that the claim should not be taken at face value, in part because the data cited in the article has, quote, not been made available for analysis, which seems pretty reasonable to me. Like, we can't actually see the basis for this stuff, which seems kind of important. Now, even more context that makes the whole thing even shakier. Wait to hear this. In fact, let me take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and I will let the other shoe drop in all of this on the Guy Benson Show. You don't want to miss it next.
You're listening to Guy Benson.
We're back on the Guy Benson Show. We're talking about COVID origins and this claim from some experts that, oh, they've got some new evidence that it's the natural origin after all. Who are these people? Listen to this backdrop. Five of the scientists were authors of a controversial study whose preprint was also shared with and written about by the New York Times in February of last year. While one of these other experts was thanked in the acknowledgments of that study. The February 2022 preprint claimed that their analyses, quote, provide dispositive evidence for the emergence of SARS-CoV-2 via the live wildlife trade and identify the Huanan market as the unambiguous epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic. The preprint also claimed there was, quote, incontrovertible evidence of a, quote, clear conduit for natural emergence at the wet market. But none of those quoted claims appeared in the version of the paper that was eventually published by Science Magazine in July of last year after a peer review. Ebright, back to this guy at Rutgers who's skeptical of all of this, he argued that these scientists now pushing raccoon dogs on us aren't necessarily credible because, quote, their track record of past false claims on this subject warrants extreme caution about their new claims on the subject, specifically claims for which the data are not presented, end quote. To me, these are just devastating comments from Ebright. So if I've got this clear, if I've got this right, you have this group of scientists called experts by the New York Times who have some data they say from last year that they saw, but they can't present the data for people to actually review it and scrutinize it. And they have not presented their data or their findings for peer review, other scientists, but they have picked up the phone, called some reporters and said, hey, we think we've got some evidence for the natural emergence of COVID. Please write about this. Please report this. And so they got their wish. The Times wrote about it. The Atlantic wrote about it. And what we've learned is the data don't even prove that these raccoon dog mammals had COVID for sure, let alone that they were the ones who passed it along to humans, which is the whole gist of the natural origin theory. You have to prove how it jumped, supposedly, from animal to human, as opposed to out of the lab right down the street where they were studying and modifying coronaviruses, you know, that kind of thing. Then it turns out that these scientists who are not showing their work, not presenting the data, not putting this up for peer review, they also wrote a study last year purporting to prove that the lab leak theory was wrong and that the natural origin theory was right and the whole thing had come from the Wuhan wet market. And they said, it's dispositive, it's evidence, it's unambiguous, the evidence is incontrovertible, there's a clear conduit. These are all of their words that they put in the preprint study that they wanted to publish last year. Right? They wanted to come out to the world and say, aha, we've got our smoking gun. It's the wet market. And then their study was presented to other scientists. It was peer-reviewed. And the ultimate final study that actually got published, that passed muster, did not include any of that loaded language that I just read to you that would suggest that this thing was over, that the debate was over, that the science had spoken, and that the evidence was incontrovertible and clear. All of those assertions, like the most bold-faced, interesting, potentially groundbreaking or bombshell discoveries that these guys had supposedly made, none of that made it into the final peer-reviewed publication. That all got left on the cutting room floor because apparently the data and the information and the evidence didn't back up those claims. What an embarrassment. What an embarrassment for exactly these same people. And here they are, what, 11 months later, they're going to try again. Oh, no, who we got it this time. It's raccoon dogs, guys. Trust us. It's the raccoon dogs. We have no data. We can't show you the data. We've not done the peer review thing, but just, you know, trust us this time. It's the raccoon dogs. And what this Rutgers expert is saying is, no, we're not going to trust you. You've already gone through this. You've tried this once before. The thing blew up in your face. There's a credibility problem. You can't present your data. And so, no, this is not a bombshell, let alone a game changer. Now, Fauci keeps saying, and he always hedges, he always makes sure to add, oh, I'm very open-minded about this. But he's not, because at every chance to actually tip the scales one way or another, he's pushing the natural origin theory, not the lab leak. He doesn't want to talk about the lab leak. His buddies hate the lab leak. There's money involved in the lab leak that could be detrimental or deleterious to other people and maybe even him because he was directing money to maybe some of this stuff. He seems to have his own reasons to tie himself into knots, suggesting that maybe what they meant by a lab leak was someone got it from an animal out in nature and then went into the lab and walked out of the lab. I mean, it is wild to see some of the stuff that he's out there plausibly suggesting could be real. But he keeps telling us that a lot of the evidence points toward the natural origin theory, and he doesn't really seem interested in commenting almost at all on the mounting and significant evidence in the other direction. And if this is some of the best they can do, this like half-assed thing about raccoon dogs that has no data from people who've already discredited themselves with a previously apparently disproven theory on this, I just don't understand why someone, unless they had some ulterior motive, why someone would continue clinging to this nonsense. Or I should at least say this entirely unproven idea compared to the other one, which has a fair amount of circumstantial evidence behind it, and also passes the sniff test and the Occam's razor test. I mean, reach your own conclusions there. And then compare the New York Times headline and the intended takeaway from that story late last week. Ooh, look at these experts. Look what they found. Versus just beneath the surface, all of the problems that make the thing basically useless. To me, that's another piece of evidence in favor of the lab leak, in my mind. Final hour of the Guy Benson Show coming up next. Andy McCarthy is here with legal analysis on the Trump matter straight ahead.
It's 5 o'clock in the most powerful city in the world, Washington, D.C. It's time for the Guy Benson Show Happy Hour, sponsored by the Finnish Long Drink. Finland's most popular alcoholic beverage has come to America. Visit thelongdrink.com. And now, here's your host, Guy Benson.
It's the happy hour on the Guy Benson Show in New York City today and tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in. GuyBensonShow.com is our website. The podcast is free on demand every day when the show is over. GuyBensonShow.com, FoxNewsPodcast.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us at Guy Benson Show on Twitter and Instagram. Catch me tonight on Gutfeld, 11 p.m. Eastern Time on the Fox News Channel. Can't wait for that. This hour is sponsored by the Finnish Long Drink. Absolutely fantastic. We love it. And the weather's warming up again. It's heating up. Need some refreshing, delicious long drink. At thelongdrink.com, always drink responsibly, 21 plus only. You can find out where they're sold near you. You can order online, thelongdrink.com. Well, with us here in studio, I believe for the first time ever, face-to-face doing this show, if I'm not mistaken, it's Andy McCarthy. He's going to fact-check me, Fox News contributor, former federal prosecutor, author of best-selling books galore. You're saying that's wrong.
It's the first time here. You had me down in your lair.
D.C.
Down in D.C.
But yeah. Not here in New York.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
So I'll say we're both right.
Okay. We'll check that one.
Okay. Perfect. So, Andy, I really want you to wear the hat of the federal prosecutor here for the purposes of this conversation. Obviously, huge news over the weekend. Donald Trump announcing that he was hearing that he'll be arrested tomorrow,
right,
calling on people to go protest this thing. His office kind of walked it back pretty shortly thereafter, at least the timeline.
Right.
So let's just start there. Is there a scenario under which a prosecutor would come to a target of a potential prosecution and say, hey, here's what's coming. We're going to arrest you on Tuesday. Is that a thing that happens sometimes or not really? What does that look like behind the scenes?
Usually, Guy, if you're in a position where you're negotiating in that way and you're giving a heads up in that way, you would not actually arrest the person in the conventional sense. You would allow the person to come in and surrender to be fingerprinted, photographed, and presented in court. So it's not like they would go out. If you're talking about someone that you need to arrest, that mm-hmm. you need to put cuffs on and bring into custody, that is not a person you want to give a heads up to about when the charges are coming. So in this instance, the DA's office has apparently been in contact with the Trump camp for a while, and this will be almost by necessity, it has to be a negotiated surrender because Trump is in Secret Service
protection
yeah. all the time. So I think despite all the noise going on between the Bragg camp and the Trump camp, what people should understand is that the NYPD, which is the best police force in the world, and the Secret Service, which is an outstanding federal agency and does a very good job with its protectees, they work together a lot because there's a lot of times when Secret Service protectees are in the New York area. So they have good relations, they coordinate well, and they will figure out a way to have former President Trump surrender, assuming he is actually charged, so that he'll be fingerprinted, photographed, and presented in court like every other defendant. But I would not hold my breath waiting to see him, you know, someone slap cuffs on him and bring him in.
Is the Tuesday thing that Trump heard, he said it was from NBC or something like that, a leak, would that be maybe the indictment gets dropped tomorrow, or is that just a made-up date that someone told someone?
So it looks like from the reporting that this is not something that came to the Trump camp from Bragg, the office of the district attorney here.
Because they denied it.
Right. They're speculating on the basis of what they're seeing reported. Now, it's educated speculation because these long-term grand juries, you can imagine that in order to have a efficiently functioning grand jury, they need to meet on regular days of the week. So this appears to be a Monday-Wednesday grand jury, which is what we called them when I was a federal prosecutor. Last week, for example, Michael Cohen, who's an important witness in this case, testified apparently the full session on Monday and Wednesday. And the last thing that usually happens in a New York case is the target gets invited, not subpoenaed, but invited to come in.
Which has happened here with Trump.
Yes.
Reportedly.
And he did what most targets do, which is he declined to come in and testify.
But there was also a report yesterday that they were offering up, Trump's lawyers were offering up, one of Michael Cohen's former lawyers, basically to come in and say, my former client's a dirtbag, which is what Cohen's doing to Trump right now, sort of this circular situation. But would that then eat up more time of this process?
Yes, because that's supposed to happen today. So I think, you know,
that's been happening.
Today's session.
Okay.
Right. And so probably they are going to vote on the same day as that they normally meet. That's how it ordinarily happens. So what I imagine may have happened here is they speculated that the indictment was going to be returned on Monday and that they would issue an arrest warrant for Trump and they'd have to arrange his surrender and that would happen Tuesday. But I think they were just speculating. He has to be indicted before mm-hmm. there's anything for him to surrender on, mm-hmm. and that may not happen today.
Okay, and just one more point on these logistics before we get into the merits of the case and sure. all of that. Let's say this does happen and they've negotiated some sort of situation where he surrenders himself. I mean, we're probably looking at, if there ever is a court date, it'll be something often in the future, right? This
right.
would be Trump coming out, posting bond or whatever, and then the thing's just sitting there
yep.
for quite some time, right?
Well, he should be released on his own recognizance, but yes, it'd probably be a long trial date. The New York court system is very congested. I mean, that's not news to anyone.
But could it land in the election year? Like, could
sure,
the trial be happening in 2024?
There's no control. They have, you know, they can make applications to the court, but it's going to be up to the presiding judge to decide those kinds of things. What I would just caution people to bear in mind, I've always thought, Guy, that once the first prosecutor crosses the Rubicon, then it will be less politically fraught for the other prosecutors who are looking at Trump to bring their cases.
And there's a case in Georgia, and there's two federal cases.
Correct. So, you know, this may not be the only
pronged federal case.
Well, it could be brought as two different cases.
I mean, see.
They're not. The question is whether they're factually enough connected that you would do it as one case. But whether it's one or two, the point is we could be talking about a lot more, cases involving Trump in the criminal justice system. And then if that happened, those cases would all have to, you know, the prosecutors and courts would have to negotiate among themselves who was going to go first. So,
okay.
It's complicated.
It is. Now let's discuss the merits of this case, whether or not you think an indictment should come, because everyone that I've spoken to who has any background in this says the breadcrumbs lead directly to an indictment is coming. Like,
right.
It seems very likely. Do you agree with that?
In the sense of they're doing everything that you would do as prosecutors to indict. Not
right.
whether there's a meritorious case.
Correct.
But yes. Correct.
Yes. The
yes.
actions are all building
correct.
Toward this denouement that you think is
right.
likely. Okay. I've said this, and I said it over the weekend on TV. I think that Trump has largely gotten himself into this mess with Stormy Daniels and hush payments, and he said it's not true. I don't believe him. Fine. Is there a possibility that there is some sort of low-level misdemeanor-type crime here? Sure. Is that the type of thing that you indict someone of this profile on? And then, I guess, to try to make it a felony, to upcharge this thing to a felony, which is the opposite of what Alvin Bragg almost always does.
Right.
He loves downgrading felonies to misdemeanors. He's doing this in the opposite direction, I think, for obviously political reasons. He would have to do some sort of prosecutorial bank shot that hasn't been proven before. It's this untested thing. And the whole thing, to me, even as someone who is willing to concede a few anti-Trump points, the whole thing just reeks of double standards and politics.
Yeah, that's all right. I would go further and say that it's not just someone of Trump's stature would not ordinarily be charged with this. No one would be charged with this
in
New York. They don't charge
so
trivial.
So they're going after him because
correct.
Of his profile.
Yes. And
see, that's terrible.
Yeah. I also think, Guy, that, you know, he is not the guy who is responsible for doing the books for the Trump organization. So as you laid out, I think it's highly likely that he had the fling that Stormy Daniels claims they had back in 2006.
As I said, he's not giving her six figures because he feels generous.
Right. But it's also irrelevant to the case, if you think about it, because whether it happened or it didn't happen, nobody disputes anymore, at least, that there was a non-disclosure agreement that was entered into in October of 2017.
And the money was
2016,
paid.
I'm sorry. And there was a stream of payments to Cohen throughout 2017, which you would figure they booked for tax purposes in 2018, right? So that's 5 years ago. I go through that because the statute of limitations here, if he can prove the felony, is 5 years. If it's only the misdemeanor, it's 2 years.
So it'd be over.
Well, you know, Bragg is going to come back and argue that there's some provisions of New York law that say if the person was out of the jurisdiction continuously that he can hold
as a – it's just moronic. So ridiculous.
Yep.
And, like, people keep saying no one's above the law. I agree. We've never had a former president arrested or indicted in this country. If you're going to do that, it better be open and shut on some serious stuff. And this is looking very much – like not that. And the feds had all of this and didn't go down this road.
Right.
Right? Even an arguably weaponized left-leaning DOJ under Biden, they took a pass on this. But this guy in New York, like, it doesn't take a hardcore MAGA person to say this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I would say, Guy, it's not just like the Biden Justice Department. This is my old office, the Southern District of New York. Mm-hmm. When they walked away from this case, I think it was during the Trump administration that they actually walked.
Yeah, this has all been out there for years. Here.
Yes. But the thing is, the ethos of my old office is they never give up a case to the state that's a good case. So this is Bragg catching the crumbs from the Southern District's table. Yeah. After the feds looked at this and just said, we don't have a case against Trump. It's not like they didn't want to make one. The Southern District of New York would have been delighted to make a case.
But they couldn't.
They didn't have one.
And so this guy's like, you know, puts his hand in the air as a, you know, left-wing local blue city prosecutor. Andy McCarthy, there's another angle to this that I want to get to right after this short break. Stay tuned to The Guy Benson Show.
The Guy Benson Show.
Back on the happy hour on the Guy Benson Show, Andy McCarthy with me here in studio. We're talking about this Trump potential indictment. One more reaction here I want to get from you, Andy McCarthy. You had written a column published today, I believe, urging Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis not to get sucked into this because a lot of the Trump supporters were out there all weekend preoccupied with Ron DeSantis. Like, Trump was almost the afterthought. They were taking their shots at Alvin Bragg, but they really want to make this about DeSantis, and DeSantis wasn't responding properly, and he hadn't said anything, and he's so disloyal, and this is unacceptable. I mean, their motives are so, so obvious, but this is what they were saying. And they beat the drum all weekend long. DeSantis had said nothing. Then, today, at an event in Florida, he was taking questions at some sort of press event, and he was asked about the situation. Here is how he responded. Cut 24.
So I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet, and so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that.
He continues in cut 25.
But what I can speak to is that if you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong. I also think it's important to point out when you're talking about these Soros-funded prosecutors, yes, they may do a high-profile politicized prosecution, and that's bad. But the real victims are ordinary New Yorkers, ordinary Americans in all these different jurisdictions that they get victimized every day because of the reckless political agenda that that these Soros DAs bring to their job. They ignore crime and they empower criminals, and that hurts people. It hurts a lot of people every single day. These Soros district attorneys are a menace to society.
All right, so a lot going on there. We didn't get Trump's name mentioned by the governor. And he went after Alvin Bragg. He went after weaponization. He went after political prosecution. He had a little side note about how he couldn't possibly speak to a scenario under which someone is paying hush money to a porn star to cover up an alleged affair. And then he went on later on in the answer, in sort of a follow-up response, he said, I'm focusing on what we're doing here in Florida. I'm fighting for the people of Florida. I'm fighting against the Biden agenda. That's what we're doing here. We're not involved in that whole mess up there. That's more of a paraphrase. So, Andy, you had written the piece, don't take the bait. Here he was asked a question about it directly, so he has to say something. What do you make of that answer?
I think it's an A answer. I mean, taking the bait guy involved not only getting into defending what Trump did, which you could say that it wasn't criminal. It may not have been. There's a lot of sleaze here, right? So why would you want to defend that? But he also has the problem of he's the governor of Florida, and what people have been trying to mau-mau him into is, will he intervene politically to prevent Trump, a now Floridian, from being extradited to New York? And I think he wants a million miles away from that. Governors don't do that in America. And the big thing, I think—
That's not a thing, right? It's just not something that happens?
No, I mean, is it possible that it conceivably could happen? Sure. Does it happen? No. And I think the point here is, looking forward to 2024, what people in this country are on fire about is the idea of a two-tier justice system and these progressive prosecutors using their authority as a political weapon. So that's where he needs to be trained if he wants to be the next president. He needs to address those things and have a strong position on them. And I think that was a real strong position today.
He also said that he was proud to be one of the only governors, if not the only governor, who has removed one of these people from office for dereliction of duty.
Correct.
So he was over the target, at least, and got the jab in at Trump indirectly. His hardcore supporters, Trump's, are, of course, saying it's not good enough. But it's really up to the rest of the Republican electorate. What do they make of that answer? So we'll see where it goes and what actually plays out, because, again, it's all rumors and conjecture and guesswork at this point.
Right.
Once we get more information, if we do, we'd love to have you back. Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, Fox News contributor, here in studio on The Guy Benson Show. Andy, thank you.
Pleasure, Guy. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Benson.
It's the Guy Benson Show Happy Hour, and earlier today, right here in studio in New York, we had a rare twofer on the program. We had Bret Baier and Martha McCallum together here on the program. Really great conversation. Here's part of it. I am thrilled to introduce two guests, the A-team politically here at Fox News, Bret Baier and Martha McCallum together. Thanks for doing this. This is like a booking coup.
Well, we've got Bret in New York today, which is always a treat.
Yeah, it's fun.
Good to have you here.
And
yeah,
you were on Martha's show, and Martha's going to be on the panel on Special Reports.
So a lot of synergy here.
So much synergy. It's very exciting. And, of course, the number one story that broke over the weekend is this potential looming Trump indictment, which he had telegraphed was coming tomorrow. There's some indication it could come as soon as today. I guess they're putting up barricades downtown just in case it comes down. Does that make sense to you, this would happen today, Bret?
It doesn't make sense to me at all. Like,
the whole thing.
The whole thing doesn't make sense to me. The fact that, you know, you have this Manhattan DA going down this road on something that the previous DA decided he was not going to do. And the actual charge is a federal charge dealing with the election and affecting the election. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can fit under that bucket. And I just think it's fascinating that this is the thing that is going to tip the balance. I mean, there's a lot of other things out there that potentially Trump faces. But this one is probably one he could swing for the fences on.
Yeah, and why not? And the thing is, you guys both know, I've been on your shows enough, I'm not a huge Trump guy, never have been. But you look at the facts of this case, including how old it is and the fact that the feds passed on it and all this, it's hard to look at this as anything other than not just political, but really an abuse of office, because Alvin Bragg goes out of his way not to charge people with felonies as often as possible, but he's going to invent, conjure out of thin air some brand new legal theory to turn this into a felony because it's Donald Trump. To me, there are some banana republic vibes there, Martha, that I think would disturb people beyond just like the hardcore Trump supporters.
Yeah. You know, I mean, his history in this town is complicated, right? You've got a lot of people who look at what's going on with crime here and, you know, police officers who pull people off the street only to find out that they're back on the street the next day. So he has a criminal justice reform mindset when it comes to, I think, the things that sort of are closest to people's lives living and working in New York City. And yet he's going way out on a limb on this after, remember, they did not pursue the financial case against President Trump. That one kind of fell apart. He decided not to prosecute that. He had a couple of lawyers who were really angry that he didn't prosecute that case. And it was about how you mark your real estate investments for tax purposes and also for asset purposes. So he got a lot of heat for that. So you have to wonder what's going on in the mind of Alvin Bragg right now that he decides this is the one that he wants to hang his hat on. And I think for the former president, he's probably so thrilled that this is where he wants to go with this. This is Stormy Daniels. It's a salacious kind of story. The president, like John Edwards, certainly has the argument, like, I was trying to protect my family. You know, I was embarrassed by this situation. I needed it to go away. Then they're trying to take what's a misdemeanor and turn it into a federal election violation. It's a very, very tricky, very heavy lift that, as Brett pointed out, Cyrus Vance didn't want to touch. The feds didn't want to touch it. So I think that probably the former president, that's probably why he was so enthusiastic about saying, you know, they're going to arrest me on Tuesday, because I think he sees this as a rallying cry for people, because it's very, in many ways, it's simple to understand. It's like, what? You know, they want to get him on that. And he's still got January 6th. He's still got the classified document situation. He's still got the Georgia election. All of these sort of more substantive things hanging out there that are, you know, the evidence is sort of building towards.
And if this one goes first.
This one is first.
Yeah. You mean if it paints a picture, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, it does.
And it sort of
I will say that he's not conceding anything. That, you know, it's in Trump's MO. He was not protecting the family, he says.
Never happened.
Totally false.
Right. As I said in the open, Brett, do you think Donald Trump would be eager to pay anyone six figures just for funsies? Right.
No.
To not talk about something that definitely wasn't an affair.
I think it's interesting. I just wanted to, that he says, I didn't have an affair. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's your definition of an affair?
Yeah. That? Here we go again.
Yeah. I mean, that.
Exactly.
But regardless, though, because I've had people yelling at me on social media and saying, you know, how can you defend Trump for the porn star and the hush money? I'm like, I'm not doing any of that. I'm saying, is this the way that you'd have the first ever indictment of a former president in this country under these circumstances and this convoluted bank shot of a possible prosecution? It just seems totally crazy and wrong to me.
Yeah.
But there's the political implications here where a lot of folks are saying, I think plausibly, that this could help Trump, at least in the short term, with the Republican electorate.
I think it'll help with a sector of the Republican electorate. I'm not sure it helps with independents and suburban women. It's not really in their sweet spot.
In a general, sure.
Yeah. No, but I mean, even in a primary, I don't know. It'll fire up the base 100%. But you saw Governor DeSantis kind of tiptoe through the tulips here, and I'm sure
Can
you
we
have
play
the
that?
Soundbite.
It's a little over a minute, but I think it's worth really listening to, because all weekend long, the Trump people were like, where's DeSantis? Why? Like, they turned this into a Ron DeSantis scandal. Because he hasn't responded forcefully enough. Well, he was asked about it today, this morning in Florida. Cut 24. Here's the response.
So I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society.
My full interview jointly with Brett Baier and Martha McCallum, our great colleagues here at Fox News, available online at GuyBensonShow.com. Also part of the free podcast, the whole show, start to finish for free every day. GuyBensonShow.com, FoxNewsPodcasts.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, the home stretch, basketball, mediums, and photo shoots. We got a lot to cover right after this.
For the full interview and more, go to GuyBensonShow.com.
Home stretch, Monday edition on the Guy Benson Show. GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast is always free when the show is over. Catch me tonight on Gutfeld, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, Fox News Channel. Looking forward to that. Well, since we've been talking about it so much, we got to talk about the conclusion. My Northwestern Wildcats over the weekend did, in fact, lose to UCLA. Number two seed, really good team. And it was a hell of a game. Cats played very poorly in the first half, were down early in the second half by 14 points, stormed back to tie. So exciting. Our fans were going crazy. Good game. They played hard to the very end and just couldn't make some key shots down that final stretch. And UCLA did. And that's the difference. Great season. Northwestern picked to finish near the very bottom of the Big Ten Conference. 13th out of 14. They finished second, made only their second ever NCAA tournament, won a game, and then took UCLA to the wire. Just very, very proud of the team. Proud to be a fan. Had a great time out in Sacramento for that one game. And maybe one of these days they can get to the second weekend. It's not to be this year, but I'll be watching the rest of March Madness with great interest. And they just went down swinging, went down fighting. Super proud of the guys and the whole program. Meanwhile, big day here on the Guy Benson Show because, as I mentioned, I'll be on Gutfeld tonight. And Christine and Wyatt had asked if they could come be in the studio audience tonight. And I said, sure, absolutely, I can make that happen. I can't pull many strings, but that's one that I can pull. So we were moving in that direction, getting them their tickets and everything like that. And then Christine realized kind of at the 11th hour that she couldn't attend after all. She had all these plans. Oh, we're going to go see Gutfeld. We're going to go out to dinner. And then she had forgotten, apparently, that she had paid hundreds of dollars for her quote-unquote celebrity medium from Long Island who lives with his mother or whatever and their little Zoom session that they're doing tonight for a lot of money. So thank God she remembered because the money was Venmo'd. And I get the sense that there would probably not be – this is like a no-take-backsies situation with this guy. So she thankfully sort of remembered that she couldn't make it. So Wyatt will be watching some fun television, and Christine will be doing whatever she's doing tonight. We've told a few of our colleagues about this. Everyone has the same reaction where they just sort of look toward the heavens, shake their head, and then just walks away. That's what happened on Friday. That's what happened earlier today. Yes, Christine.
I just told this to Wyatt, and I truly, truly believe it. My whole life could change tonight.
But you forgot that you were even doing it. You wanted Gutfeld tickets.
Well,
that sounds like a really life-changing experience.
I'm just putting it out there. But my whole, everything that I believe in, everything that I thought I knew, everything could change. I could be a whole different person tomorrow when you see me.
Well, I can't wait to have that conversation. We can pick your brain about everything that happened and what revelations that you came up with from the ghosts. What if he's like, oh, Christine, your dad and Carousel are both speaking to you right now, and they're saying in unison, they're singing in harmony right now, that you're a liberal Democrat and you should never work with Guy Benson again.
I'm just not going to entertain
what happened?
Any of this.
Would you be like, oh, well, yeah, let me quit my career over the voices that you're hearing?
No, I don't think something like that is going to happen.
I don't know.
I do have to ask you something. Uh-huh. No wine, right? Like, definitely I shouldn't have any wine while I'm doing this.
I don't know. I think it's pretty well known that mediums require some liquor to really get the spirits flowing, so to speak. Different kind of spirit. Right?
One other thing, and then we don't have to talk about this.
Okay, I'm just trying to help.
Will you and Wyatt and Justin promise me one thing? Just say yes before I ask you.
Absolutely not.
Will you promise that you will believe me? Whatever I tell you happens tomorrow, will you promise me that you'll believe me?
No.
You think I'm going to lie?
Well, I don't think that you will make up what is said and what occurs. I just won't believe you that this stuff is all real if you believe that you have some new giant truth that you've discovered. Like, I won't believe in the process, but I don't think that you will make up what happens.
Like, if I say to you, without prompting, he said to me, there is, you know, a little horse running in the heavens right now, and mm-hmm. she's running towards you.
A pony.
Right.
No, she'd be running away from you, clearly.
But if I tell you that, would you believe me?
I would really struggle to believe that. I would. But maybe it happened, and by that point, the horse would be out of the barn. So let's just Jen Psaki this thing and circle back.
Done.
Tomorrow for a little home stretch action. Meanwhile, last thing that we'll mention, I had quite an experience today. And Christine and Wyatt were there for the very beginning of it, but weren't there for the heart of the action. I am actually shocked, to be honest, that Christine did not push harder to stick around for this. So I have not had new headshots, glamour shots, in years, right? So when they, on Fox News Channel, it's like coming up in the little box at the bottom, it's like a little smiling Guy Benson on the panel or whatever, like joining the show later. That is a photo of me from, I want to say, like 2017. It's been a minute. It's like 5 or 6 years, certainly since COVID, for sure. I think it was 2017 or 2018 was when I last had these done. So it's like, all right, time for new ones. And so I had different tie, no jacket, all these different combinations. And they have a whole studio up there. They have a whole team up there. They asked me what kind of music I like, so they put on some Billy Joel just to get me very comfortable. And I just, knowing you, Christine, I'm just shocked that you didn't insist on staying and somehow like becoming part of the process or even like getting in front of the camera at some point.
I had thought about it.
Yeah.
And I thought about like if you said to me, like maybe she should just step in for a pose, what we were going to do. Like mm-hmm. I was thinking the back-to-back.
Right,
you know,
with arms crossed?
Yeah, something.
Like a 90s sitcom?
I was thinking that, but our boss was coming down the hallway, and I knew she did not want me there. I had to go.
I see. So you felt pressure from her presence.
I knew. I knew better. But I was going to. It's like Lucy trying to get into the show. I was going to try to get a picture.
But you gave up when the boss rolled in. Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. It lasted a while. It was more than half an hour. They must have taken hundreds of photos. So I'm hoping at least one of them is good enough for publication, right? You never know. I had two different ties, all these different outfit combos, and then they would be like, turn this way, then back that way. Look over there. You're laughing. You're happy. Oh, perfect. Yes, yes. It was a whole thing. There was no mist. There was no fan blowing my locks. There was none of that. But we'll see how it turns out. And here's the other thing. Previously, in some of my previous headshot shoots, they've just been like, okay, great, thank you. We will let you know what your headshot is when it's published publicly. I was like, you know what? I would like to have some sort of role in this, given the fact that it is indeed my face, right? So to me, it's sort of an important one. It's going to be splashed all over the place on TV and elsewhere. So, and they were like, oh, yeah, no problem. So I will keep you abreast, Christine, of what the next step might be. And again, I'm just like fingers crossed that over the course of 35 minutes and hundreds of photos that at least one or two of them are acceptable.
Well, you are. I mean, let's be honest. You're a very photogenic person.
They kept saying that like, oh, you photograph so
you
easily.
Do.
I'm just standing there looking at a circle and obeying the guy when he tells me to turn this way or that way. Yeah.
There's like, I have different angles that are good, but I'm just not a photogenic person, and you are. So huh. I think you'll be fine.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe I'll run my options past you at some point.
Really?
No, but I'll do it with Adam. I feel like Adam should probably have some
I
say.
I have good style and taste.
Can we get a fact check? Can we get a fact check on that?
Will you believe me if the medium tells me that?
What, that you have great style and taste? The fact that you are doing this has already disproven that.
Yeah, and thanks, by the way, for telling the boss. I never told her. Or my mother, by the way. She doesn't
know.
We
talked about it on national radio. I'm sure the boss knows because the boss listens to every minute of this program every day.
She didn't know how much it cost because I never said how much it cost on air, but
you told
her. Oh,
that's true. I did tell her that. That was new. I'd see the thing is, I report, she decides, is what happened there. I'm just providing information for the gallery, so to speak. All right, we got to go. You've got an appointment that you almost completely forgot about. On Zoom, do you have a ring light? You're going to wear makeup?
Yeah, well, Megan has like that whole YouTube setup.
Oh, gosh, so you're pulling your daughter into this?
Yeah, by the time I get home, she said she'll set up the ring for me. She's very excited about
it. Now, if Megan were to be in the room with you, would there be a discount for a child from the extra person fee? That's very ghosty.
It's not like this is not an amusement park where there's an adult fee and a child fee.
It seems like it might be an amusement park in some ways, except amusement parks are real. So that's, I guess, a significant difference. And you actually have to go to an amusement park for it to be fun as opposed to sitting in front of a screen. All right, well, I will be waiting on pins and needles with bated breath to discover what is revealed to you. Ooh. Meanwhile, Wyatt will just be enjoying Gutfeld here in real life. Airing at 11 p.m. Eastern time. I'll be on the panel. Can't wait for that. Back here on the radio tomorrow. Same time, same place as always. Also, I'm on Outnumbered tomorrow on the couch. Just a heads up. Noon Eastern. Lots going on here in the Big Apple. It's the Guy Benson Show.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.